5 years ago, Mark Klein took a chance. He was a telephone technician who had stumbled across proof that the Bush administration was secretly sifting through Americans' phone calls and email. So he blew the whistle. These days, when he hears government people condemning WikiLeaks for lifting the curtain on diplomatic secrecy, he's not too sympathetic.
The government thinks that they can intrude into all your private lives, collect your email and your web browsing and all that. But now the government gets in an uproar when somebody else collects it and tells the people what the people ought to know. And it's a good thing that that's been exposed. If it hadn't been exposed back in 2002, maybe the Iraq war, which was based on a lie, might have been prevented.
Mark Klein says the WikiLeaks criticism has turned into a witch hunt for its editor-in-chief, Julian Assange, but he says that's misguided. You don't blame the messenger if you don't like the message. And Mark knows this. He was there himself. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
Support for The Story comes from Red Hat, an enterprise open-source company that works within communities to create technology the open-source way. RedHat.com.
This story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced by American Public Media.
Coming up later on the program, more hidden compartments, what it was like for a small girl from East Germany to sneak through the Iron Curtain. But first, before the days of WikiLeaks, the challenge of being a whistleblower. These are difficult days for WikiLeaks. Its most recent exposure of thousands of secret diplomatic documents has now made WikiLeaks the target of a concerted effort to close it down. Companies like Amazon, which hosted its servers, have kicked them off. Visa and PayPal won't process donations. And the founder, Julian Assange, is in jail under what his supporters say are trumped-up charges to silence him. Mark Klein is watching all this very carefully. See, he became a whistleblower himself. He was an AT&T technician for 22 years. And in the chaotic months after 9/11, Mark got a strange email at work announcing that their telephone office in San Francisco would soon be getting a special visitor.
I was sitting at my workstation one day, and I get this email. It said, an agent of the National Security Agency was coming to visit and talk to a management-level technician about a special job, and we should be sure to, you know, greet him and let him in, because we had control of the entranceway. I began thinking, well, what are they doing in a telephone company office, right?
So did you have a chance to meet this person?
I happened to be on duty that day, and a guy came to the door, and I opened it, and I realized who he was. I said hello, tried to shake his hand, but he didn't seem friendly enough to do that. He was very grim-faced, and I directed him towards the people he needed to see. And that was the end of that. And I thought I'd never hear anything about it again.
But still, Mark wondered why someone from the National Security Agency would be touring AT&T. The NSA was responsible for foreign intelligence, not domestic. And soon Mark heard that a secret room was under construction at the AT&T facility on Folsom Street, not far from his office. Well, one day he was over there himself.
And as I was being walked around by one of the technicians, I saw a new room that was just, they were just finishing it. A guy was finishing putting the door lock on it. It was not only had a regular door lock key, it had a code lock on it. You had to enter a code number to open the lock. And the guy whispered to me, oh, that's the new secret room. We can't go in there. You know, as a technician, when you work in that office, you had keys to every room. You had to. If there was trouble, you had
to. And did you think about saying anything to anyone at that point, Mark?
Yeah, I thought about it, and I quickly said, forget it, because I know what happens. Historically, what happens to whistleblowers is they find a way to fire you right away. I was in my late 50s at this point and couldn't afford to lose my job and jeopardize my pension.
A few months later, when Mark Klein was transferred to that office, he found out a lot more about the secret room.
They assigned me to take care of the Internet room. So bingo, I ended up right on top of this room. I couldn't enter it, but I was all around it. And after a few weeks working there, I came across the engineering documents, which are not classified. They were just company engineering documents. And if you didn't know anything about what the context was, you would just look at it and say, oh, it's just ordinary AT&T engineering. It shows routers and connections between routers and things like that. So I got hold of three documents. Accidentally, in fact.
What do you mean, accidentally? Someone left them for you, or
not for me in particular? One of them was lying on top of a Cisco router in the Internet room area, And I saw it there for several days, and nobody picked it up, so I took it to my desk. At the same time, the guy I was replacing, when I arrived, a few weeks later, he announced he's taking a buyout package and leaving. And as he was clearing out his desk, he picked up another two documents and said, "Do you want these? Otherwise, I'm going to throw them out." So I said, "Sure, I'll take a look at them. Maybe it'll help me." So I took those two documents, and when I read through them, and the third document that I'd found on top of the router, I almost fell out of my chair. They showed in detail what they had built, showed basically the equipment inside the secret room.
Which is now not so secret anymore to someone who can read an engineering document.
Right. And when I looked at it, I read down the list of equipment, and a lot of it was mundane stuff that you'd see in any office, any telecommunications office. But then there was something called the NARUS, N-A-R-U-S, NARUS STA-6400. STA stands for Semantic Traffic Analyzer.
Hang on, what's a traffic analyzer?
Traffic analyzer looks in detail at the traffic in the data stream. It looks not only at the address headers, namely who's sending to who, which itself tells you a lot. It looks at the content of messages. You might say, "Give me all the email from Chicago in the last 24 hours. Or give me all the email to and from Mark Klein in the last month, and here's his email address."
So could you put in a catchword there? Could you say, show me any email that has the word Allah in it or something like that?
Sure. It's very flexible, very expensive, and very fast.
Mark, this fellow who was showing you around, the guy who was planning to retire, did he give you any hints as to what this secret room might mean? Was he able to shed any light on this for you?
Well, I asked him only one direct question because I didn't want to become, suspicious myself. The secret room is on the sixth floor, right next to the 4 ESS switch room, which is where the public's telephone calls go through.
So that's phone traffic there, right?
Phone traffic, right. And I told him, it seems awful funny that the secret room is right next to the ESS room. I figure they must be listening in on phone calls. He immediately answered, "No, internet." Now, he knew the internet room like the back of his hand because that's where he spent most of his time. And as I got to look at the documents further and examined the equipment inside the internet room, I found there was a cabinet called the splitter cabinet. And what the splitter does is effectively a total copy of everything. And that goes, I discovered, to the secret room. So in effect, they were copying the entire internet data stream through fiber optic cables to the secret room.
So help me with one other thing, Mark. What is actually going through that room? Are we talking about just AT&T phone calls or a little bit of internet traffic? What's there?
It's a major internet hub. So it's everybody's internet stuff, everything you can imagine.
You mean my Google searches are going through there? That's
Google
sort of
searches, web browsers, financial transactions, anything you use the web for. And I might add that this is not just the data of AT&T customers, but everybody, because AT&T is a major player. Their fiber optic system, which is laid across the country, is used by other carriers. Their carriers have agreements to exchange data packets to make the global network, the internet, more efficient. So there's lots of room on the AT&T network right now. Let's send those packets in this direction, even though you're not an AT&T customer. So AT&T's hub gets a lot of just about everybody's web usage data.
You're listening to The Story. And so Mark Klein had a firsthand detailed view of what would come to be known as warrantless wiretapping by the government in the early days of the War on Terror. Now, Mark was no supporter of domestic spying. He recalled the 1970s when Nixon used the NSA to spy on anti-war activists, and he felt like he was somehow collaborating.
Here I was doing the dirty work for the government because my job involved hooking up new circuits into the splitter and troubleshooting circuits that are already in the splitter.
So you're actually making the NSA's equipment work.
That's right. Exactly. I thought of, here I am wiring up the Big Brother machine as Orwell conceived it in his famous book, 1984. I was wiring it up. It was a dilemma for me. The atmosphere in the country was very scary, too. American citizens being declared enemy combatants and disappeared into brigs. I didn't tell anybody. It